you know, are there areas where we could deploy an AI engine that would improve that business model? And that's the framework that we always encourage clients to start with, because this isn't about adopting technology for technology's sake. It's about really understanding the business model and the prioritization, and then focusing the new technology on where it's going to make a material difference in the performance of the company.
This is the ERP Organizational Change Journal podcast, brought to you by Nessel & Associates, a Newport Beach, California-based ERP organizational change management firm serving the private equity industry. The ERP OCJ seeks to share expertise, insight, experience, and research, and to create effective conversation to help guide ERP organizational change to real, measurable, and verified success. And now, here's your ERP expert and host, the founder of Nessel & Associates, Dr. Jack Nessel.
Hello, everyone. Jack here. In this episode, we explore how AI and private equity synergies are fueling business transformations and reshaping the landscape of investment strategies and operational efficiencies. We'll dive into how leveraging AI can not only enhance due diligence and decision-making processes, but also create substantial value across portfolio companies. Join us as we unpack the innovative approaches that are setting the stage for the future of PE investments and how these technological advancements can be integrated to ensure robust, scalable growth of private equity. Today, we explore the synergy with George Stalling, a virtuoso of software as a service and AI innovation, and a seasoned veteran in the realm of business transformation. George's expansive career encompasses executive leadership, private equity, and pioneering digital solutions with a significant global footprint. From driving growth to authoring pivotal transformational strategies, his expertise is invaluable for companies in the midst of rapid change. Joining us from Dallas-Fort Worth, George, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jack. I'm excited to be with you today.
George, before we get started, can you tell us more about yourself? Further introduce yourself to our listeners, please.
Yeah, sure. As you mentioned, I'm a digital and business transformation expert. You know, I've been lucky in my career, frankly. My background includes roles as a software developer, database administrator. I was a strategy and operations consultant for a number of years. Was also a PE operating partner, helping define and implement value creation strategies. I've sourced transactions in private equity, so kind of looking at more the buy side of deals. And I think importantly for this conversation, I've also been chief transformation officer in five businesses of various sizes. And those roles kind of informed my view on how to drive and implement and define value creation in portfolio companies. If you think about it, if you think about my background from a brand perspective, you know, I was on the leadership team at NVIDIA for several years. NVIDIA, as everybody knows, a great company, is very well known in AI these days, which is great. Was also on the leadership team at ON Semiconductor. I was also at Bain & Company. For those of you that know Bain, it's one of the top three strategy firms in the world, both in the Dallas office, and I lived in South Africa and London for 3 years with Bain, which was a wonderful experience. And I also worked at Pricewaterhouse, PwC. That's kind of where I cut my teeth and I learned software development. And I also was a database administrator there for a while, which was a wonderful foundation in terms of having an appreciation for what software can and cannot do, and also how to implement software successfully. So there's a bit of an art and a bit of a science to it. And my time at PW kind of taught me that. And I've used that skill set, frankly, really for the last 25 years. Currently, I'm the CEO at Lunation. So Lunation, as we'll talk about, is a relatively new SaaS platform that enables business and digital transformation at scale. And I'm also a senior partner at Quadrillion Partners. So Quadrillion Partners got started in 2012. It's a management consultancy. We assist private equity owned and independent companies in transforming their operations, deploying new strategies, improving their processes, and adopting technologies, including AI. All of our activities there are really around improving revenue, driving profit expansion, improving customer satisfaction. And again, all of those really revolve around, for private equity sponsors, it's the question about how can we improve the valuation of the company? And then for independent companies, usually it involves their stock price, right? So they want to implement things to drive their stock price higher. Those are the lenses we typically look at as we engage with clients. And on the Quadrillion side, You know, we measure the amount of EBITDA improvement, profit improvement that our clients obtain as a result of the work we've done. We're right now right around $360 million of that since 2012. So we've got a good track record of building profitability in companies. It doesn't mean that it's necessarily a linear path, because sometimes it can be a little bit bumpy. But we do, you know, stay in contact with all of our clients and kind of track those kind of metrics. So again, that's my background in a nutshell. I've been lucky, originally from the New York area. I've lived kind of all over the world, as well as in the U.S. I've been here in Texas now for 15 years, which I love. Was in California for a period of time in Silicon Valley too, which was great. Lived in Arizona. Anyway, that's my background.
Well, thank you, George. I appreciate that. Great experience and background. We're excited to have you on today because your substantial experience in leading software as a service and AI-driven business transformations means you certainly have a lot of expertise in aligning cutting-edge technology with strategic investment goals. And your insight into driving profitability and operational efficiency for PE firms will undoubtedly be valuable for our listeners. Listeners, all of us here at the ERP OCGA hope you find this podcast useful as we share lessons learned, discover best practices, and explore the human element components of ERP organizational change. Please stay with us till the end. George will give us his actionable golden nugget of advice based on today's conversation, and I will recap today's key discoveries and offer suggestions on how to implement what we have learned. Our conversations on the ERP OCGA are built around the listen and learn approach. It's when you apply what you've learned that you begin to move the needle forward. So let's dive in. So my first question for you today, George, is considering your extensive background with LUNation and AI innovation, can you elaborate on how LUNation's platform specifically caters to the transformation needs of PE-backed companies?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, here's the way I think about it, and maybe a little bit of background for the listeners too. You know, transformation is hard, right? It's a hard thing to do in companies. Again, you're going in and you're trying to, you know, redirect a company to do things differently. Sometimes those initiatives can be around how they're engaging with customers. Sometimes it relates to what their operational footprint might look like. It usually involves adoption of technology, changing of processes, et cetera. The part of transformation that's probably not well known, but has been documented by firms like McKinsey and BCG and others, is that about 70% of business and digital transformations fail to meet their financial goals. So transformation programs generally are not successful in the market. The failure rate is due to a lot of different things. It can be from poor planning to kind of poor prioritization of what you're working on. There's some pretty big issues around you're asking people and companies to do things where maybe they don't have the skills or the time to do them, frankly. A lot of companies, frankly, particularly global companies, can be somewhat weak on collaboration. Some companies don't provide incentives for people to own and to drive specific transformation initiatives. And then there's a host of other factors that just come in. It's, you know, the old adage, life happens as you're doing these transformations that impact the overall success rate. What's interesting when you look at the failure rate, just to throw out some data, for last year, there was an estimated $1.2 trillion globally wasted on digital and business transformations. So if you think about that for a minute, it's a huge number. It's a big problem. And that number really includes things like the level of investments that companies have been putting into these initiatives, et cetera. It includes an element of software purchases where they bought a software package and it really didn't work out the way they planned. You know, could include additional infrastructure stood up, et cetera. Anyway, it's a really big number. So part of the reason that we started LUNation was to help companies be more successful in transformation and to really lower that number. And, you know, we've got a really good track record from Quadrillion over the last 15 years doing business and digital transformation. You know, I always like to say LUNation is the tool I wish I had at Quadrillion 15 years ago, and definitely in my role as chief transformation officer to a number of these companies. Because really what LUNation does very simply is it allows you to plan and orchestrate your transformation programs in a real systematic way. So again, some of the root causes of failure have to do with kind of poor planning up front, have to do with, poor coordination as you get the programs going. Lunation solves a lot of those core problems. So very simply, what Lunation does is it gives companies the ability to collaborate on ideas and then to score and rank those ideas and then to convert those ideas to initiatives as part of a transformation program. You then define what we call a transformation artifact plan or a TAP, and I'll talk some more about that. And that TAP then gets iterated on by the team, gets developed, and then goes through an approval process. And then Lunation gives you the ability to collaborate and track success against that initiative, and also to take corrective actions as you need. And we've kind of built this in a cloud platform. From our perspective, it's the tool that if you're a chief transformation officer or an operating partner in a private equity fund, maybe you run a strategy group at an independent company, maybe you're the CFO. It's a tool set you really want to have because it gives you the ability to have your pulse on everything that's happening around the transformation. And again, transformations are a bit, I'll use a bad analogy maybe, they're a bit like a kayak going down a river, right? You never quite know what rocks you're going to hit. You never know how fast you're going to go. And the goal with Lunation is to give you that visibility so you can take corrective action. And Lunation, I think fundamentally, as we've tested it and as we start to roll it out, we're seeing significant improvements in overall cycle time in terms of companies' abilities to execute on initiatives faster. And I think a lot of that is because it's workflow driven, it's role driven, and you have that visibility really across the company, which today there's no tool that does that.
So, George, I'd like to circle back on something you'd mentioned there regarding high failure rates on digital transformations. And you talk about the idea of proper investment, operational footprint, needed process changes, proper prioritization, proper collaboration. How do you believe AI-driven solutions are redefining value creation for private equity firms in the current market?
Yeah, it's a great question. Here's the way I think about it. I think it's a tale of two cities here, right? So on the one hand, I think PE funds and the deal partners and operating partners and even some of the limited partners that I keep in contact with and speak with regularly, I think they're worried about AI because they're kind of uncertain on how AI may impact their portfolio companies, right? So the first way I think about this in almost a classic strategy sense is that, AI solutions can really disrupt business models in portfolio companies, right? So it's a bit of a blind spot and it's a bit of an unknown. But the concept here is that everybody's kind of new to AI, at least at some level. And what you're seeing in a lot of markets is kind of new incumbents, new companies coming up in those markets that are really challenging some of the established players based on their new AI technology, right? And that's a real risk for a private equity investor. And that's something that I think keeps LPs, it keeps deal partners, it keeps general partners and operating partners up at night. Because if you have an incumbent in a market that has an AI solution that's kind of challenging your portfolio company, that could mean that the valuation of your portfolio company may go down over time. That's a bit risk. And then you don't want your portfolio company to be viewed in the market as what I'll just characterize as a digital laggard, right? So that's the one side of it in terms of how AI solutions are kind of impacting, value and value creation in private equity. I think the flip side of that coin is that I think AI represents an enormous opportunity for private equity investors as well as operating partners and general partners. The nuance here is getting the portfolio company leaders to embrace AI technology to drive efficiency, to drive in speed, and to drive customer engagement, is really important. And I think the challenge with AI, like a lot of tools and capabilities that, kind of emerge in the world over time, is that you're not sure, on AI, unlike other tools like kind of classic software, you're not really sure on AI if it's going to deliver the results you want. Frankly, until you build the AI, until you train the AI, until you start to methodically measure the outcomes, right? So it's not like traditional software where you knew, okay, if I put in this ERP, just based on everybody else's experience in the world, I know I'm going to be able to improve efficiency in the organization. I know I'm going to get better data, et cetera. AI is kind of not like that. AI is a bit more R&D-ish in a sense. So the prescriptive view that I have of AI around AI-driven solutions and defining value creation is it's all about piloting AI projects, right? So you have to look at, and I think what I've seen a number of private equity funds do, which I think is very effective, is look at the business model of the company and have kind of a 100,000-foot discussion about where could we deploy AI in this business to make a material difference in performance. And really what that discussion is you're partly having the discussion that says, what drives this business model? And as we look at the drivers of the business model, is it speed? Is it cost? Is it customer intimacy? What is it? You know, are there areas where we could deploy an AI engine that would improve that business model? And that's the framework that we always encourage clients to start with, because again, this isn't about adopting technology for technology's sake. It's about really understanding the business model and the prioritization, and then focusing the new technology on where it's going to make a material difference in the performance of the company. You know, again, I think the answer here is it kind of depends on the business model, right? In some cases, AI will really help with speed. In other cases, it may really help with customer intimacy. In other cases, it may really help with cost. I think it just depends on the business, but you need to frame it against the business model in order to really figure out, you know, how it's going to redefine and help augment. It's really an augmentation of your value creation strategies.
Oh, thanks, George. Certainly agreed. You know, AI is in the R&D stage in terms of where it will go practically. And, you know, it's just in its infancy now. And I think, you know, PE in general is unsure about AI. And we, in fact, get questions on the new AI technology all the time, you know, pretty much on a weekly basis now. So good points there. Maybe getting a little more granular with your track record in maximizing profits through technology, what AI advancements or opportunities specifically do you see as pivotal for operational efficiencies, improvements in portfolio companies?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. And again, it's an important question, because if you're a PE operating partner, a general partner at a private equity fund, or even a CEO of a portfolio company, you want to know what's working today and what's not, right? Because there's a range of AI solutions. Some are cutting edge, some are not. You know, the way I think about this is there's three broad groups of AI today, right? So you have what I would characterize as more reactive AI models in the market. So those would include things like chatbots, kind of simple decision-making tools. Those are kind of proven. And those are areas where, you know, if you're looking at a company where customer service is critical, getting a real powerful chatbot out is a bit of a no-brainer, frankly. And in some cases, you can consider it almost table stakes, something you must have out in the market. There's another group of AI solutions that I would call, you know, kind of limited memory type things. So this is your everything from large language models, which obviously have been in the press a lot with ChatGPT, as well as other AI tools that use historical data to make decisions, right? So this is one where you've heard a lot about learning models and things like that, where you have to train the models. This would include predictive analytics, things that might recommend personal solutions out to somebody. So, you know, go buy this, or, you know, you could cross-sell this into the customer, et cetera. Those types of AI solutions are really good for improving decision-making and forecasting and customer engagement. And they're really become kind of mainstream today. They're still somewhat cutting edge. And as we just said, you know, some of them are R&D related. Some of them are not. So you have to be thoughtful about how you deploy it. But that's the mainstream part of where, you know, AI is today. And then, you know, the next bucket is kind of more the theoretical AI that can do things like respond to emotions and intentions. You know, that part of the AI universe, frankly, is emerging and will emerge over the next few years. You know, that has the potential, I think, to transform customer interactions, HR management in terms of how employees are thinking about their jobs and driving interventions to reduce attrition rates and things of that sort. But that's really nascent technology right now. So the way I think about it is you focus on kind of the limited memory AI segment, which is stuff that's kind of mainstream and proven, but a little bit, you know, R&D-ish. If I think about the specifics here, what we see and what we often encourage our portfolio companies, clients to do, and independent companies, on the large language model front, which has gotten a lot of attention, obviously that can be used in a number of areas to drive speed and cost, right? So one of the areas that jumps out all the time is marketing, right? So marketing teams tend to spend a lot of time on collateral development. They spend a lot of time on crafting key marketing messages in emails. They spend a lot of time on various marketing campaigns and tactics. Large language models, ChatGPT or others, frankly, are very, very good at helping you speed up collateral development and also improving it. So that's an area that, again, is almost a no-brainer. So what we see a lot of companies doing is, rather than adding another marketing resource to the marketing team, they'll start to aggressively use these large language models because it avoids you having to hire another resource. You could also perhaps trim back some of your costs externally on advertising agencies, et cetera. There's also some tools, like there's one out there called Reloom, which we've used at one of my clients, that allows you to, you know, develop sitemaps for websites with, it's almost like a large language model to do that. And then it leverages back-end Webflow capabilities to actually develop the first pass of that website in terms of a Figma design. And then also you can convert that into Webflow very quickly. So in kind of English speak there, what that does is you define the website outline, and then you're able to generate really the full design within seconds, literally within seconds or minutes, using this tool. So if you think about, for anybody in the audience who's defined websites in the past, that can be a multi-week process. And what this AI engine allows you to do is to shrink that time to maybe a day, right? And it's not to suggest that the design that comes out is perfect, because it's not, but it gets you 80% to 90% of the way there. So you've dramatically improved your speed. And from a marketing perspective, you know, the marketing organization then just saved a ton of money by using that and has gotten out something that they can iterate on, frankly, and improve, you know, very, very clearly. And that's just one example. The other area that I think, other couple areas that are, you know, practical here, we talked about chatbots. So chatbots, typically the goal there is to kind of siphon off, as I call it, calls that are routine, or that interactions that are routine. Chatbots have gotten much better over the last few years. When they were first introduced, they were kind of painful to use. But I think generally now, without human intervention and given the level of training, they can really provide some good customer service for real routine activities. And again, this is one that if you're thinking about value creation in a company, you're thinking about your customer service organization. You know, a lot of private equity firms look at what's called Net Promoter Score, or NPS, which is a measure of customer satisfaction and also kind of referral rates. So the higher your NPS score, it means you're more likely to refer a friend to that company, right? And that's an important metric. Chatbots can help you improve your NPS score. And again, it's a proven technology. Yes, you have to train it, and you have to train it well. But again, it's kind of mainstream and something that, you know, as you think about value creation, I definitely encourage people to look at. The other area that's emerging that we're seeing in a lot of clients, and I'm happy to talk some more about this, is what I call AI search and discovery. So this is where you train an AI to find things faster than a human being could, usually with far better prioritization, right? So one of the applications we've seen, for example, is in the recruiting space. So companies that maybe rely on recruiting contractors or employees regularly for maybe various jobs, or maybe they're a bit of a matchmaker between buyers and sellers on different human capital, you know, these AI capabilities can be really powerful. So if you think about it, let's take executive search. For those of you that are familiar with executive search firms like Korn Ferry and Heidrick, and there's a lot of great ones out there, their process often relies on kind of a classic database of candidates, and also having each of the recruiters have a universe of people that they know that they can call around jobs and get referrals and all that stuff. What some of these AI tools allow you to do is to go through a massive database and to do it in a way that's far faster than a human could, and come up with kind of rank order recommendations of candidates to potentially fill a job, for example, or in some cases even recommend a product. So if you've got a company that has a massive amount of SKUs, I'll give you an example. At ON Semiconductor, we had 32,000 SKUs when I was there. And our what would happen is engineers would go to our website and they try to find the right SKU that would go into their test board that would go into an electronic device. That process is, it was not perfect. What AI lets you do with these AI engines is just put in a few more characteristics, kind of describe what you're looking for, and you'll get a prioritized view of those products, for example, or a prioritized view of those resources that you should look at. And again, you get it instantaneously. So the benefit there is speed and inherently also cost, right? Because you're providing a service where you don't have to have a lot of incremental human intervention, et cetera. So the AI search and discovery, I think, is an important part. The other part we're seeing a lot of now is the automation of data analysis and insights, right? And this is something that we're actively baking into Lunation as well, where you can ask AI questions either in a large language model format or otherwise, where AI can take data sets and identify trends that maybe you've missed, right? So it'll take a set of KPIs, look at them, and then come back and say, hey, this happened in your sales, or this happened in your gross margin, this happened in your OPEX, this happened here. And oh, by the way, it was with these customers in these channels, blah, blah, blah. So again, really powerful stuff that improves your quality of decision-making and improves your speed of decision-making. You know, as you think about costs in the organization, a lot of organizations have financial planning and analytics, FP&A resources that kind of do this for a living. It can make those teams a lot more effective. And that's kind of an emerging frontier, if you will, in the analytics. It's actually a hard thing to do from an AI perspective, but I think it's also very important. And then the last area, kind of the fifth area I'll mention here, just around specifics, that I think every company should look at is what I just call document management. So, you know, one of the early pre-ChatGPT launch areas of AI that was very effective is the concept of taking PDFs and other static files, right? Being able to have a AI engine, you know, machine learning engine, grab that file and scrape the data and put it into a database. And that's really powerful because, one, it helps for things like if you have core applications that are kind of not online, you can improve quality and check quality of applications. So let's say you're in the mortgage industry and you're getting a lot of hard copy applications, which the mortgage industry is still very much known for. You can scrape that data and get it into a database. And as you're doing that scraping, identify, oh, this zip code is wrong, and then kick it out in an automated process so that somebody, a human, can look at it, right? Or you can look at all the data and say, hey, this is correct. We're going to let it go through the rest of our process. So again, I view those document management and, you know, kind of the scraping of data off of PDFs by AI engines, that's a bit of table stakes. But again, it's something that a lot of companies don't use. And as we talk to customers about transformation programs and things like that, you know, we always look at elements like that. Because again, the AI universe, it's a spectrum of maturity. So people should think about it in that context. And then some of these things, you know, document management, chatbots, those are kind of almost no-brainers. So
some great examples of AI trends and possibilities, George. And you mentioned that you are baking into Lunation, looking at KPIs and identifying trends. And because I like case studies and real-world examples as learning tools, can you share with our listeners an instance where Lunation's AI capabilities directly contributed to the success of a PE firm's investment strategy?
Yeah. So one of the examples that we talk about often is, you know, one of our customers in the tech space, about 75% of their products were sold through distributors, right? And 25% were sold directly to customers. You know, typically the way they kind of went to market, their go-to-market function was they would provide catalogs. They had both hard copy catalogs you could request. They had an online version you could download. And they also had obviously their website that you could search. And there was kind of a standard price book that was published and the sales team was involved in that, to give distributors pricing on a pretty regular basis. And this was a market where month to month, you did have some price changes. So you had to be mindful about whether or not your price book was stale or current, right? And what the company did and what we included in Lunation as part of the program was kind of a new AI tool that the company had built on our recommendation that really allowed it to put kind of all the variations of its products into this AI engine. And the reason we felt that was important and turned out it was, you know, the AI engine was able to improve the ability of customers to do their search based on natural language, to find the products that really fit them faster and with more accuracy. It reduced the need for catalogs. It reduced the need for, you know, customer service intervention about, hey, will this product meet my needs? The other element to it that was really important for this client was it's an engineering-oriented company. So engineering time was really valuable. And one of the things that the company wanted to see if they could optimize was the need for engineers to engage with customers regarding product selection, right? It wasn't that they felt that those interactions were bad. In fact, they were quite positive in terms of building relationship. But engineering time being valuable, they wanted to see if there were ways to kind of improve the time that engineers were spending on new products and kind of derivative products and less on, oh, go select this product. So the concept was really around improving, you know, customer search and capability. The other kind of dimension of this, which as they got into the project, was also around product cross-selling. So the concept of if you select this product, you know, we recommend that you select this product as well, right? So the concept in terms of the trained AI became, okay, if you're going to buy this product, how likely are you to buy this next product? What's the percent of that, right? And we've done a lot of this kind of work with clients over the years where you look at, I call it, you know, cross-sales correlations. So if a customer comes in on a given product, how likely are they to buy the next product? And you can statistically take order databases and develop that. And we've done that a lot. And this client had a good appreciation for that. And they actually embedded in the tool, it's kind of the second version of the tool, a view of not just finding the product that fit your needs, but also suggesting a set of additional products that the customer might want to look at as part of their offering. So again, that really helped with cross-selling. And again, this tool, from a Lunation perspective, this is not a tool we built into Lunation, but it was an initiative that we tracked in Lunation and worked with the third party to kind of get it developed with the company. They tested it extensively in-house. And again, this is kind of a learning, I think, for listeners here. They tested it in-house with the customer service team first. And, you know, you kind of think, well, why would they do that? Well, customer service knows a lot of the questions that customers ask, right? So here they're really testing the tool. They're training the tool a little bit on the different questions that come in. Once the customer service organization felt, hey, this is a good tool, it's kind of ready for general release to customers, they then kind of embedded it on their website. Also for some of their more strategic accounts that had individual portals that were used in the company, it was enabled there too so that those customers could come in and do that search. And it did that nice automated view of kind of cross-selling as well. It was a really big success. You know, this company, just to give you a sense, was around $400 million revenue business each year. It generated, by our estimates, around a 2% uplift in EBITDA, which for a company that has a lot of its products going through distribution is a material number in terms of value creation. So again, that's one that, you know, again, I think some of the learnings I've talked about here in terms of how to approach an AI project, what to look for, you know, you really got to define it well, and then you got to pilot, test, and then roll it out to be successful. And that's a case where, you know, it went really well.
George, I'd like to ask you, with your global experience, how does IT AI governance vary across international markets? And what best practices can PE stakeholders adopt for consistent approach?
I would use the word uneven to describe it. So whether you're looking at it geographically or even, frankly, within the United States, I'd say it's different. It does vary also by business unit within companies. It varies within private equity funds by portfolio company based on their leadership. You know, generally, what I've seen in terms of best practice on this, like a lot of technologies, frankly, not just AI, is IT leaders that have very clear definitions around the adoption of AI and And those definitions include not just the benefits, but also the risks associated with it. And some of the risks, as you're alluding to, are regulatory. Some of them are privacy oriented. And those do vary by geography. You know, GDPR is kind of the poster child here, where if you're deploying an AI technology in Europe, you're going to have to deploy it very differently with a different set of capabilities than maybe the US, because the regulations around privacy and things like right to be forgotten are much more important in those geographies. So my view on this, and kind of my message to viewers and other folks here, is that it's going to vary a lot by international market. Just by definition, you have to have kind of your checklist of deployment, and you have to be flexible in that checklist, because it will vary by geography. And that's an important dimension to your governance process. It's an important dimension to how you think about it. The other thing that I tell, you know, CIOs often, because I've been a CIO when I was at NVIDIA and elsewhere, and, you know, success in IT, and this is true with AI as well, to me, is always about the portfolio of projects you have. And this is also true in transformation, by the way, is the mistake a lot of organizations make is that they'll have a few projects that are really home run projects, and they won't have, I'm a big baseball person, so I'll use a baseball analogy, they won't have a lot of singles and doubles. They'll always be shooting for a home run or a triple. And what I always encourage people is you look at your portfolio of AI and you look at your governance process. Make sure your governance process is allowing you to select the projects that will give you a balanced portfolio, right? Because you never really know if that home run project is going to generate a home run or be a dud, frankly. But you want to make sure that you have a lot of doubles and singles, so that, you know, you, all things being equal, you can feel like your total batting average, whether it's in a transformation program, an AI governance program from a CIO perspective, or just general IT governance, that you develop it with that in mind. And again, it's the concept of being intentional about it. Don't let people and, you know, kind of whoever shouts the loudest dictate your portfolio. Make it intentional, because that will allow you to deliver a probable ROI on what you're doing, right? And for AI governance right now, probable AI is the name of the game, right? Because you don't know really, as we talked about it, there's some AI tools that are proven, and those might be your singles and doubles. And there's some that are more cutting edge, and those might be your triples or maybe even your home runs. So you want to balance it and make sure that you can point to successes and, you know, learn things from other dimensions. And then piloting it is the name of the game. So,
well, let me ask you this. You mentioned being intentional, and we do know that being intentional takes leadership. And yep, drawing from your extensive experience in executive leadership, how do you integrate your strategic approach to drive impactful results in private equity investments from a leadership perspective with the proper adoption of AI? Mm-hmm. You know, change is not easy or cheap.
Yeah. You know, I always encourage CIOs and CFOs and CEOs that we work with to do what I call paint the picture, right? So I think it's really important to, we were having a conversation with a client about this yesterday, for example. You know, that client, just to give you some sense, is probably going to, you know, sell their business in 2027. That's kind of their plan, but they don't really have a sense of what they want the company to look like then. They don't really have a sense, as you talk about, their technology, what they want their underlying technical infrastructure and architecture to look like. They have some sense of the customers they want to be going after, but, you know, painting the picture for me is having that view of what you want your portfolio to look like, what the ROI might be on that portfolio, and leading in terms of painting that picture for the team. Because you have to paint the picture and get people to understand it first before you can start to execute it. You know, to your point, that's where leadership comes in, is to spend the time doing that. Again, it's the concept in my mind of being intentional, being a bit more planning oriented, and then articulating that vision and that picture in terms of what you're going after, and trying to make it a bit material. So it's not, you know, vision statements are terrific and everybody likes them and so forth. They tend to be a little bit lofty. This is probably the next level down in terms of detail, to say things like, okay, for our AI portfolio, we have 6 initiatives that we're going to go after. And of those 6, we believe 3 of them are with AI tools that are tested and that we can generate real AI value. And maybe the other 3 are more cutting edge technologies. They're kind of pilots. We're going to pilot them and see what happens. We need to spend time training. They're kind of, you know, riskier investments, if you will, but we think we'll learn a lot. And if they materialize in terms of value that we can put into production, then we're going to go forward on that. So being able to articulate that and think about it proactively. And again, that goes back to what I was saying earlier about look at your business model, look at the levers that matter to your business model, and then layer in your AI strategy, right? And figure out what does that portfolio look like? We found that to be the best way to get everybody on the same page. And you're kind of setting expectations too around level of difficulty, level of effort. And then there's obviously the other part of this too, which is to kind of lead by example, right? So you want to define your strategies and make sure that as you're looking at your strategy, you're decomposing it into different elements and then kind of walking the walk and talking the talk as you get it delivered. And that communication is really important as well.
Super. Thanks, George. Good stuff. George, as we wrap up this insightful conversation today, I'd like to ask you for your golden nugget before I let you go. Sure. And given all that we've discussed today, could you briefly summarize the key takeaways our listeners should remember? And based on these insights, what is the most valuable piece of advice that you would offer our listeners as they navigate their own journeys in private equity mergers, acquisitions, and enterprise resource planning?
Yeah, I think the most important elements, I think, of what we discussed is to be planning oriented as you approach AI and as you approach transformations in general, right? What we've found with clients is that lack of planning up front really hurts the overall delivery efforts, to be real blunt about it. I always like to use an analogy with clients like Lewis and Clark. You know, Lewis and Clark planned a lot before they went on their expedition. You need to think that way. So I guess my main nugget here is really be prepared to plan and also be process, pilot, and data-driven. I think if you do those kind of four things, that you're improving your odds of success and transformation as well as adoption of AI tools.
Super, super. Thanks, George. Well, folks, as promised, that wraps up another insightful episode. We've explored the dynamic role of AI in private equity, the transformative power of digital solutions like those pioneered by Lunation, and the visionary leadership they're required to steer these investments toward a successful future. George has given us a wealth of knowledge on integrating AI with business strategy to not just meet, but exceed market demands. And I encourage all of our listeners to apply these valuable insights to your own ventures. It's through such innovative approaches that you can truly move the needle forward. Thank you so much for your time today, George. I appreciate it. I appreciate your dedication to your trade. Before we go, please tell our listeners more about how they can get in touch with you.
Yeah, so a couple of websites, www.lunation.com. We are standing up a new site, actually, over the next few weeks. And then you can also get me at quadrillionpartners.com. And I'm obviously on LinkedIn as well. So happy to engage with folks and answer any questions. I'm always happy to field a phone call if somebody's grappling with a particular issue and they want an opinion. Happy to do that. So,
thank you again, George, and be well. And we'll talk soon. Thank you.
Great. Well, thanks, Jack. I enjoyed the conversation. Have a great day.
Thank you for joining us for today's episode of the ERP OCJ podcast. This podcast is intended as a forum to study, share, and discuss ERP organizational change successes and challenges. We discuss the people, process, and technological components of ERP organizational change by drawing on knowledge from extensive research, collaborative learning, and practitioner expertise and experience. We are incredibly grateful to have friends, colleagues, and mentors join us in our podcast as we seek to promote, connect, and foster relationships in the ERP organizational change community and contribute to its success by bringing research and practice closer together. We want to make sure this is the most useful and insightful ERP podcast you listen to, and we'd love your help in doing so by leaving us feedback and a review. A great place to do so is at Apple Podcasts. Just click on the Listen in Apple Podcasts link, then click Ratings and Reviews, and let us know your thoughts. You can get more info about the show, including show notes and episode highlights for this and all of our episodes, by visiting nesselandassociates.com and clicking the podcast option. Please join us again next week as we discuss the latest ERP, organizational change research, practice, and stories. And don't forget to follow us on social media, #TheERPOCJ. Thanks again for listening. Have a fantastic week.